Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Frozen heroes. Gonna tell you about frozen heroes. Gonna tell you about
comic books,
costumes,
facts,
boots,
and other stuff.
In this week's issue, Jack Kirby leaves Marvel.
Welcome into Bros, Foes, and Heroes. I'm not doing it
again. I know,
there
was just a little bit of it there.
It was, yeah, I don't know. It's like I decided, all right, as I started doing my intro, both times I was like, you sound way too serious for this. And it just kind of threw me off.
And then something came up your throat.
Yeah, a little bit.
Haga.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Welcome in.
Yeah. Welcome into our show today. We are getting back into something a little different. It's something that we started. I should have gotten that fixed with my hair before we started. A couple of months and stuff back, I'm slowly setting up, primering us up for us to dive into the Mr. Miracle 2017 series by Tom King and Mitch Gerards. And what I'm doing, though, to get there is a lot of history, I think, that just kind of ties into it in an odd way that I think is interesting history about the comic book landscape in general.
Yeah.
And we kind of dived into, and that's the relationship between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And today, I think I'm going to take us to or through the last little bit of chapter here that's going to lead to Jack leaving Marvel. He will come back for a little bit towards the end of his career, but it's a lot different. Obviously, he's been on a run. We're going to pick this up kind of in like the late 60s. So after he's come back in the I think it was late 50s, early 61, they have success with Fantastic Four. And he's been there from 61 all the way up until 69 now. And he's a staple there of Marvel Comics in a way, because it's him and Stan doing Fantastic Four, and he's also doing a lot of work helping out with a lot of other things.
You think it was ever discussed, like, it should it be four or five
on the amount of
forecasted Fantastic Four, Fantastic Five?
See, here's what I don't know, obviously, because we're 15. Not there. But there are a lot of similarities. We talked about kind of with Challengers of the Universe, Universe, which it's 4 and 4. But also, I don't know the exact breakdown. It could have been when they created the Justice League at the time. I think it was just four members. It was Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and maybe Flash.
Mm.
So that's the four characters. So if Martin Goodman, who was the owner at the time of Marvel Comics, is like, hey, rip off DC.
Mm-hmm.
If they have four, we have four.
Yeah.
So could be something like that too.
I think they needed a monkey.
No, that was for the Wonder Twins.
It was for Wonder Twins, yeah. But I mean, I just think any good superhero team needs a
what was the monkey's name?
It was shit.
What, that guttural of a
It was
Zoink.
Zoink.
I feel like it was something like
I'm
that.
Zoink the monkey. It was all I can think of is Ookla the Mook right now, and that's Thundar the Barbarian. Ookla the Mook.
Thundar the Barbarian.
Yeah, he was like his Chewbacca.
You want to know something else? And I think we've talked about this too. It just fits in with what we're doing, that character design and stuff. That was Jack Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because after he got out of comics, he ended up going into animation and stuff a lot. And a lot of it was with like Hanna-Barbera.
You can
and
tell
stuff like that.
I mean, you can tell the character design, because it's pretty simple, you know, but it's kind of squared off.
Yeah.
Like Kirby stuff.
But so what we have here with them is, through all the success that Marvel has in the end of 61, they start picking up steam through the mid 60s. They're very popular. Just like everything, though, it kind of comes in cycles. And so sales start to decrease.
His name was Gleek, by the way.
Gleek. See, I wasn't too far off. With
no,
Zoink.
You weren't very far off.
I mean, knew it was some like weird onomatopoeia word like that.
No, it's Gleek. As in, I can spit through my teeth. Yeah. Sorry, Jack Kirby.
But I don't think he did the Wonder Twins monkey.
No, he did not. Thank God.
I don't know.
Bad.
It's, well, at least it's the one of them was always a form of water, and the other
form
one was,
of an ice bucket.
What was the other one?
Form
was the other
of
one an animal.
Yeah, it was always an animal.
But they had a monkey.
Form of a seal. Now, wow. Gleek, get over here and figure out how to use this seal and this ice bucket together.
Was the Wonder Twins essentially just different problems for Gleek to figure out how
pretty
to save
much
the day?
Yeah, yeah. It was, and it never ended in like monkey friendly things. No. Like it, you know, oh, good, we captured the giant bunch of bananas. Or
yeah,
any, you
no,
know,
it was always like
it was
very
always
serious.
Yeah, it was rough.
Well, they were always there with the, it was part of the Justice League, right? Because it was always the Super Friends.
Well, yeah, it was Super Friends. Yeah, yeah. I don't even know if you could call that Justice League.
Well, I mean, it was part of, so they called the show Super Friends, but the Justice League was there. Remember? At the Hall of Justice.
The Hall of Justice.
But
it's Thursday.
Where was I? Oh, so sales start to decrease at Marvel, and things, series are getting canceled. Like,
do you remember the bad guy place?
Yeah,
it was
at
the
Legion
of
Doom.
It was like in a swamp.
Yeah, it's the Legion of Doom.
Sorry.
Not to be confused with that we talked wrestling earlier, that Legion of
Doom.
That
Legion of Doom's a different one.
What a
rush. Yeah, it's a whole different thing.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody loved
that. Did the Legion of Doom, did it ever have the two goat herder guys that like to lick everything? You know what I'm talking about?
The Bushwhackers?
The Bushwhacks, yeah.
Oh, man, early 90s wrestling was freaking weird.
They would just come out and they would just start licking it.
I think maybe, yeah, like there was like one match they teamed up together.
I thought maybe they,
because they came out in the shoulder. That's the thing too, is the Legion of Doom had shoulder pads with like these weird like spikes on them. They had this
it was like a
Mad
bad,
Max look.
Well, it was that or like a bad Motley Crue cover.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing. Like early Motley, like Shout at the Devil.
Here is also the great thing about early 90s wrestling is everybody had a character that was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like there is an accountant that wrestles and there's a clown. And there's
The clown.
Doink.
Doink the
there
clown.
There was
Gold Rush.
Gold Dust.
Gold Rust Dust.
Gold Rust
gold,
Dust?
Gold Dust Rust. It was Gold Dust, right?
Yeah.
Who was his dad?
Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, okay.
Dustin Rhodes was Gold Dust. And then Cody who wrestled.
He did that thing.
Yeah, Cody who wrestles now is his brother. and Dusty is their dad. The American Dream is Dusty Rhodes, baby.
By the way, have we talked about the
which that Hard Times promo I still love. Go ahead.
Is that... What's the one that the Von Erich movie? Have we talked about that?
Iron Claw?
Yeah.
That looks good.
It looks very good.
I mean, it's going to be sad as hell. But
that's all right. Beautiful downtown Fort Worth.
Oh, it's...
Sportatorio.
What is his name?
Yeah, I don't remember. Every time...
We got to interview him once at the radio station and have his book.
Every time Casey and I drive into Dallas, he always looks over there and goes, yeah, it's still not there. Are we?
Oh. Yeah, no, there's so many crazy things that happen. Like, I have read...
That place was bad, too. It was in very bad disrepair.
That's where Stone Cold got to start.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, so who are we talking about again? Jack Kirby?
Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. That's the thing about the show.
I know. I'm sorry.
I have to just spill all this random knowledge.
Talked about wrestling for a while before we started.
Yeah.
Because Mason is very excited about the Survivor Series.
Tonight. Yeah. Yeah. And so it just kind of got me nostalgic, and we were talking about stuff.
Spoilers, they wrestle.
Yep. So Marvel is seeing a decline in the stuff that they're putting out.
And this is about when? What time
68.
Frame?
We're looking 68. At the 68, okay. 69.
Okay. Sexy.
While all this is kind of going on, Martin Goodman has sold his stake in owning the ownership of Marvel Comics to Cadence Industries.
Mm.
Cadence Industries is a part of it.
It sounds like almost Resident Evil kind of corporation. Like
a little bit. It was a giant kind of conglomerate that owned a lot of different things. And I think like Marvel was part of like a chemical film and something. I can't remember the
chemical
names exactly.
Film.
So I'll tell that all the information that I'm using here are out of the books. The Slugfest book that I've recommended to Mike before. And then also the Sean Howe book. I think Reed Tucker did Slugfest. And then the Sean Howe book of the Untold Marvel history. So that's what I'm using for the sources for this story here was I tell it. But so as it's being sold, they're trying to figure out what to do. And they decide, well, we need to cut back on some books. So things like Doctor Strange gets canceled. X-Men gets canceled.
Holy crap.
There's like, you know, they start cutting things. Well, I mean, obviously it's comics. Things come back. There's a lot of cancel, bring back, just like TV shows or any other kind of industry like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just have so much. And it was one of the poor selling titles at the time. So it got cut. They had been talking and pitching a while back. Jack Kirby had been been working on this Inhumans series, which they made a TV show, very, you know, not well received ABC TV show.
Yeah.
Based on it, but still, it was this long kind of, his space epic kind of, and there had been plans of them bringing it back in its own book. Well, then with them cutting it, it was going to be moved now to share a title with Black Widow, and they were going to cut how long it was, and he was going to have to move stuff around. So he's already having to move things around there. Talking about Jack Kirby here,
yeah,
and just kind of setting up the scene of what's going on there. Also during this time, I think we talked about it in one of the previous episodes, but I'll bring it up again. Joe Simon, after the which Joe Simon and Jack Kirby are co-creators for Captain America.
Okay.
When the copyright was up for Captain America, Joe Simon sued for copyright claim and, you know, rights and all that. Marvel fought them on it, and they essentially told Jack, hey, if you side with us, whatever we end up settling with for Joe Simon, we'll give you the same thing, right? Whatever he gets out of the ruling, you get the same thing.
Right.
So Kirby agrees to, and Kirby says, I was under the assumption that anything we created at Timely Comics at the time was, you know, Timely's product. So, they end up ruling, and I think the ruling comes out to like $7,500 is what Joe Simon gets.
Okay.
$7,500.
Wow. That's all he got in his settlement. It's sad for him.
Yeah.
But also while this is going on, Kirby's been asking for a new contract because he feels like he's doing so much work and not being compensated for it. All he's being listed as is like, you know, a drawer here where he feels like he's plotting out the entire issues for Stan, and then also there's I'll tell a story of coming up here, but it happened multiple times of where he would be called on to do last minute things and he'd always be there to fill it in for him too, and he had just never gotten anywhere of getting a new contract from Martin Goodman and Marvel. So now going up to New York with the settlement coming out, them being owned by a new company, he was pushing for it again, new contract, get my settlement. They essentially tell him, you can either take it or leave it. The offer that they do give him, and he decides that, another thing, sorry, before we get into it, I have multiple points that I just need them. While the decline is going on and while Kirby feels so kind of disheartened by doing so much work and not getting a lot of credit, what is starting to happen is, while he's in his, drawing room down kind of in his basement drawing, when he gets something that's really good, instead of saving it to pitch to Marvel as an idea, he starts saving it for his own stuff. And he's like, no, because they're just going to not let me. He thinks back to how he created Silver Surfer. they created a Silver Surfer comic. Mm-hmm. You think that Jack Kirby got to do the comic for the character he created?
Yeah, no.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Things like that just kind of wear at him for a bit. And so now he's like, no, that's too good for essentially, I'm kind of putting words in this association. That's too good for them. I'm saving this for something for me. Mm-hmm. I can do something, you know, and he would turn in something a little off a bit. Or not off, like it was, but just, you know.
Platinum Surfer.
Yeah.
Sure.
Also, while this is going on, the comics world is a very small industry. So, especially at that time. So, a lot of people kind of know each other. Carmine Infantino is a bigwig over at DC at the time. And he is visiting the Kirbys in New York for a Passover dinner, I believe. And while they're there, he's like, hey, Carmine, let me just show you what I'm working on. Mm-hmm. How about I come to DC and you let me do this stuff?
Yeah.
And Carmine's like, I love the idea. Like, let me work on getting something for it.
Yeah.
So they kind of pitch it around. Finally, a couple other things happen. He gets the contract from Cadence. It's not what he wants. And he just realizes that I'm not going to win here, kind of thing. Also, they tell the story. I can't remember in one of the books where, not Vinny Coletta, it's Jim Steranko couldn't, or whoever it was, couldn't get a John, whoever was on Silver Surfer, couldn't get it done in time. Like, was going to miss deadline, and Stan Lee called Jack Kirby on a Friday and said, hey, I need an entire issue by Monday.
Oh.
And he sat there and cranked out an entire issue of Silver Surfer there over that week. And there's things like that that he's just kind of like, you know, overwhelmed about. And so eventually on, I think it was March 6th of 69, he announces, hey, he calls up there. I think the story they tell in Marvel, the Untold Story by Sean Howe, is that Stan has gotten the package from New York with Fantastic Four 102 on his desk. And it's not too long, like, after he's received the package, he gets a phone call. And it's like, hey, Jack's on line one.
Hmm.
And he, like, picks it up and he, like, hangs up and he calls everybody else in there. And he's like, hey, that's it. We're done. Like, as soon as the last copy of 102 was there. And so now we have where things kind of take a weird, strange turn. I don't want to say weird and strange, but it strains the relationship.
Yeah.
But it also is a very interesting story to get into of just what happened to Jack Kirby at DC. And we've talked about it a little bit with how they would redraw the faces of Superman on him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that more, because to me, that's the more interesting part of this, is just what happened and it branched off there for him, because we're getting to Mr. Miracle. So we have to get to a very, you know, to see how that was created to get there. And we'll go ahead and dive into that part of the story right after this. Welcome back. So
holy shit. You know, it's after Thanksgiving. How about that for a segue?
That got me off guard.
Yeah, that's good, huh?
I was gonna tell you. I had the stupidest idea for a bit on the way up here when I got the elevator. To ride up here.
They all smell so bad, by the way.
No, this one didn't.
Oh,
because God. There was a mop bucket in there with the mop water and it smelled, you know. And there was a bag of trash there.
Sure.
And I rode up to...
Tough way to talk about somebody.
Hey, no, that's all that was in there. It was me and the actual, you know, objects I'm talking about. And I rode up to the 16th floor to get me a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I got back on and it was the same elevator.
Yeah.
And same, obviously nothing changed.
Sure.
And I got back up and I came up here. And I came up with the stupidest bit. I'm going to crack myself up, but everybody else is going to think it's stupid. What if there's a superhero that, right, kind of like the Wonder Twins, can just turn himself into anything, but he is so anxious and hates people so much that all he uses his superpowers for is to turn himself into an inanimate object so people don't talk to him.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it's like, he's like, oh no, somebody's getting on the elevator, and he turns himself into
It's not the Wonder Twins, it's the OK Twins or something, you know.
It's just something so, like, that's it. Like, he does that.
No,
You would think, oh, he can use it for all this, but he's just so petrified of people.
Why are you a freaking mop every time, Bob? Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
He turns it, like, he's so nervous that, like, he turns into
things
that
his friend turns into a bag of trash every time. It's just the two of them. Yeah. It's like, damn it, I wanted to be an eagle.
I don't know why I found that so funny, but there you go. Okay.
Yeah, so all I was saying is, what's hard to believe is we're 2 days after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Holy crap. It's going to be Christmas in like
a couple weeks.
3 weeks, yeah. Yeesh.
Yeah.
All right. Move along. Nothing to see here.
So, let's get back into our Jack Kirby story.
Jack and Kirby.
DC side of things that I think make this a little more interesting. I can tell you what we're going to focus on next week is I'm going to have an issue of Mr. Miracle from 1971, the original run that we're going to focus on. And there's a reason why we're focusing on the certain issue. And when we get to it, I'll explain why.
And the thing is, like, I want you to understand, I know nothing, less than nothing about Mr. Miracle. I mean, I just don't.
That's lovely, sir.
Just no real knowledge at all.
So essentially, and we'll get into this more once we dive into it, but the basic concept is there's like a good planet, and I'm not trying to sound like an asshole, I'm just
no I got you
there's a good planet Go ahead, and a bad planet and they're at war with each other, and they decide that, all right, we need to go ahead and form like a truce, like nobody's winning this war. So for peace, they come up with the bright idea of, we'll trade suns.
Okay.
Like, that's our peace treaty.
Okay.
So the ruler of evil planet.
Star suns or?
No, like actual.
Birth suns.
Birth suns.
Oh, okay. All right.
So.
That's easier.
Yeah. Honestly. So of these two, I can't remember. What's Highfather's name? I don't know. It's just Highfather.
Highfather.
Highfather is the leader of the good planet.
Zeus?
You know the leader of the bad planet, because the bad planet is Apocalypse, and it's led by Darkseid.
Highfather?
Highfather.
Who the?
Highfather rules New Genesis.
Okay, sure. I see that on overpasses all the time. Somebody, I'm just Highfather rules.
This is why I said Genesis. Good. This is why I said good planet, bad planet.
Sure.
But Darkseid,
I know Darkseid
is the ruler. But essentially, they trade suns for this truce. So Darkseid's son goes to the good planet, and he is raised by the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Good guy's son goes to Darkseid, and he's raised by Darkseid.
Mm-hmm.
The good son raised by Darkseid. That's Mr. Miracle.
Oh, okay. What a terrible trade.
Yeah.
Let's trade kids. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Anyway. All right. I'm looking forward to that. It's Darkseid's son, basically, his stepson.
Yeah. Mr. Miracle is Darkseid's stepson.
Wow. Okay.
There's a lot of cool things about the character. Like, the character himself, he's also known as, like, his persona. He escapes eventually, like after a while, he escapes Apocalypse and gets to Earth, and he takes on the moniker as becoming, like, when he gets here, the first like person that he becomes friends with and kind of interacts with is an escape artist who ends up getting killed somehow in one of his tricks. So he kind of becomes the new escape artist named Mr. Miracle. So that's like his.
I think I remember you saying something about that before.
Oddly enough, Jack Kirby based the fact of him being an escape artist on another comic book artist and writer at the time, and Jim Steranko, who at one point in time was a escape artist too.
Wow.
But anyway.
Is Mr. Miracle kind of a anti-hero?
No.
He's not? He's just a do-gooder all the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not like a...
I always felt like, because of his name, that maybe he was kind of a goofball that screwed up sometimes.
So here's
things like that. And you don't have to go into this now, because I mean, we will.
I know, but I'll get into it, at least from my perspective of it, is so there's only 18 issues that Kirby did.
Okay.
Then there's like a hiatus, and I'm just talking, like, he has appearances, like he would appear in like Justice League stuff, or like, you know.
Sure.
I haven't read everything.
Yeah. Waiting on a bus, there's Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, I haven't read everything. I can tell you, though, like in the 80s and stuff, and then I know they revamped the series, and he came back and had, like, six issues in, like, the 90s.
Right.
And then there was kind of, like, very minimal things of that until, like, 2017 when this 12-issue series came out. And this 2017 series is kind of like it, at least for me, it puts the character in a whole new light and takes stuff from all of Kirby's kind of stuff and maybe picks and chooses from other things. But that middle part, it never seems like the character is really taken seriously, and there is kind of like a lot of cheese at times with it.
Well, maybe that's what I know about it, you know.
You're probably thinking about, remember Superman was under mind control trying to sleep with his wife.
Yes, I remember Big Barta.
Yeah.
Did I say that correctly?
Big Barta, yep.
Thank you. You know, in India, there is a restaurant called Mr. Miracle Indian Chinese Restaurant.
I don't think they're related.
They're closed right now. They made a temporary change to be in a cloud kitchen.
Oh,
just
okay.
Letting you know.
Okay. Yeah. So Jack Kirby is left and he goes to DC. There's a couple different stories of what happens there.
That is that character. I'm looking at a picture of him.
That's the Kirby one.
Oh, you can certainly squareheads.
I love all the squareness of
Kirby's. Oh, I get it. Though. No, I'm not saying it's bad.
I get you. But so when he's there, there's two different stories. One goes where they essentially wanted Jack Kirby to. The theory was that Kirby could do whatever he wanted, and that DC.
Is this the same guy?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
There's a holiday movie.
It's not
on the Hallmark Channel called Mr. Miracle about an angel on a heavenly mission for Christmas joy.
It's not related.
Oh, okay. All right.
But they tell the story of one where Jack says that, or DC says that. Jack asked him to do Superman and they wanted to keep it with a house artist and have somebody else do it because they're very like that was their cash cow.
Okay.
Then there's a story goes where Jack says that they asked him to do Superman and he said that he didn't want to take work from somebody else, which could also be because, I mean, we've heard things like that from Kirby as well. Either way, whatever it is, there's months after they sign Kirby of them hailing the king is coming to DC, right? They throw out all these ads because in comics, getting Jack Kirby was a big deal at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was the first. He was like Jordan at that time.
If you knew comics, like I should paraphrase that because if you didn't know then, because that's part of the problem with people at like, you know, Cadence Industries and stuff is when he went and asked for a contract, they're like, we don't even know who you are. Like, this is the contract you get because everybody knows who Stan Lee is. He's the face of it.
Yeah.
Who's Jack Kirby?
Yeah.
Who's, you know, not, and I'm not putting that on Stan either. It's just like, it was so new and stuff at the time too, that they might not have paid as close of attention to what they had. But so they hail that he's coming and the first thing they put him on while he pitches them the New Gods, they're going to go ahead. All that stuff that he saved over here to the side is the New Gods. That's what ends up becoming New Gods, Mr. Miracle, and the Forever People.
The Forever People?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Never heard of that one.
It's a group of... We'll have to get into all that then.
Yeah. I'd love to. Love it.
So it's the whole Fourth World saga.
And aren't they making a New Gods movie?
I know that they were. Ava DuVernay or whatever was directing it, I think.
Yeah, I would be interested in that. Like, I think that's what
I hope I didn't butcher her name.
No, that's what I think DC ought to be doing is focusing on some of these, and I hate to use the word minor, but they kind of are minor characters instead of Superman, Batman, all that kind of stuff. I think that they've seen great success with those characters that nobody knows the history of.
Yeah.
And if you make little changes for movies and stuff, it's not as big a deal as, you know, making Batman, you know, left-handed instead of right-handed or whatever.
Yeah, you're not getting the same backlash. Yeah. So, either way, the first project that the King of Comics gets put on while he's at DC is Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, which just kind of seems weird.
Rough.
There's a story told in one of the books where, like, one of the head or one of the, I guess, in management there at DC goes to one of the editors and is telling him, like, hey, can you tell Jack to not square his stuff so much to round it off to make it look like everybody else is here?
Yeah.
And the editor is like, they went and they stole, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's lovely. They went and they stole it's Jack.
I'm doing it in the microphone.
Well, I know. But they went and they stole Jack from Marvel, and they didn't even, like, it wasn't like they appreciated his style as much as it was just, we just took him from Marvel.
Just want to screw Marvel is all it was,
So.
That's rough.
While all this is going on.
Poor Jack.
He
really got screwed a lot.
He does. You know,
he really did.
He has all the first issues of New Gods planned out and everything. Like, he's been working on this for a while.
Yeah.
It's his baby. He gets to, you know, write. He gets to draw. It's all of it is him. Mm-hmm. So he has, like, he's ahead of schedule. And they hire a guy by the name of Vincent Coletta or Vinny Coletta to be the inker.
Okay.
There's a video that I'll have to send you at some point in time to talk about just because it's interesting. Or just, I don't know how long it is, but it's one of the guys breaking down, just looking at the difference between his work. Vinny Coletta was notorious across the comic industry because he was quick,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily because he was good, not saying he was bad.
That's why the ladies loved him.
But he was known for, like, a job that would take normal people 10 days. He could get it done in 3.
Sure.
And the reason he could do that was because he would shade out, like, characters that were back there in the backgrounds. He wouldn't, you know, like, he would just color stuff in so he wouldn't have to, like, do things, but just to make it work. So a lot of Jack Kirby's art, if you look at it, you can tell the pencils that are there compared to the finished printed product are just so, like, there's things missing, people missing from backgrounds. There's things just fully colored in, stuff like that. But it was because he could get it out quick. DC hired him because he was quick for that. Mm-hmm. And he was going to work on the New Gods book. We talked about it last time that even while he's working on Jimmy Olsen, every time he would draw Superman, they didn't like the way that he drew his face. So they would have them, different in-house artists, go back, erase, and redraw Superman's face.
It's just so weird.
There were stories of during this time that Marvel and DC were like, you know, they really didn't like each other and were going back and forth, kind of spying on one another. Sure. There's a story in the Slugfest book by Reed Tucker where he talks about that they knew, like, DC thought, all right, we for sure have, like, a mole in our office here because we do things and somehow Marvel does it not too long after. Mm-hmm. So they planted, like, a fake memo of how they were going to do these blockbuster books, essentially, of 500 pages and charge $1 for them. And they left it as, like, a memo, and they called it, like, you know, the memo was titled, you know, Blockbuster, something like that, about these books. A couple days later, there's a note in one of the, like, fanzines about, oh, Stan says that he has the idea of, hey, we're going to start doing 500 page books for $1.
Wow.
And so they were able to figure out then that, all right, we for sure have a leak then. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they caught the guy because he let it slip by saying words that were in the memo.
Oh, wow.
Without. So there were things like that going on.
Such skullduggery from two comic book makers.
Well, here's the thing. And that's what happens to Jack here, too. He has the first issue of New Gods, right?
Yeah.
His new series that they've been pitching for a while. It's supposed to be this big thing. He's had it finished for a while because it's his baby.
Mm-hmm.
DC has it. Mark Evanier, who is worked with, he was an assistant of Kirby's. He's also a biographer, and I think he also might have done some ink work and stuff. He's worked in comics a lot himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he tells the story of how he had to go up to Marvel's office around the time for something. And as he gets back to the bullpen, it's tacked up onto the wall behind there is every single page of New Gods 1 on the Marvel wall.
Wow.
Vinny Coletta, who had been inking it, had photocopied every page of it and had taken it. Yeah. And had photocopied it and had taken it. He was like, a couple days before, one of the girls up there had asked Mark for Jack's home address because Jack had lived in New York, grew up there, and then in 69 and stuff, and kind of after taking the job around DC around that time, had moved out to California because his daughter had asthma real bad.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it got him further away from Marvel in a way.
Sure, sure.
So he's out in California now, and they had called and asked for his address, and Mark had given it to him. After he goes up that day and sees what's up there, he calls Jack, and he's like, Jack, you're not going to like this at all. I got to tell you. I just saw New Gods 1 up at Marvel. And Jack responds with, I know. I got fan letters.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah.
Holy shit.
Like, they even wrote him letters to us.
That's crazy.
So, people at the time, I think, weren't used to Jack's dialogue can be clunky at times.
Sure.
And it can be hard to read, and it turns off people. There's a reason, though, I think, why the series is still talked about now and people still love it, because obviously it's still good on some reason. But at the time, the cells didn't, you know, match up what they saw. I guess before I should get to this, while this is all going on, they keep, after issue 4 of all the series, they take Vinnie Coletta off. Right. Okay. That leads to Vincent Coletta's firing, and there's another inker hired. Around issue 5 of Mr. Miracle, and this is the issue we're going to talk about next week. It started off in the story back when he was still at Marvel. There was a company that they worked with that did fan art and stuff that would just use his art that they would get from Marvel to sell T-shirts and stuff like that. And Kirby would never see any profits and stuff for it. So he started to write this story. And Mr. Miracle, kind of about this huckster, like, you know, conniving kind of guy that's all about stealing money and stuff from Mr. Miracle and trying to earn off of what Mr. Miracle does and stuff like that. And it transformed instead into a parody of Stan Lee.
Oh, no.
And it's a character called Funky Flashman is what he calls
Funky
it.
Funky Flashman.
But essentially it is portrays Stan as a... just kind of, he makes a living off of everybody else, doesn't do anything for, you know, himself. I think the editor or the second in command at Marvel at the time was Roy Thomas. Mm-hmm. So he has a butler, and they look kind of an awful lot alike, you know, when he draws them, both of them,
sure.
Of the butler kind of second in command named House Roy. That's, you know, making fun of Roy Thomas.
Yeah.
Wow. And so Kirby just pulls no punches and kind of just goes
you can't really blame him at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, they photocopied all his shit on a wall and wrote him letters. I mean, that's...
So he goes after it. But yeah, it is just something that...
Well, and here's the thing too. Like, they're just so far up their own butts that they think that the actual comic buying public is going to give a shit about this whole feud, you know, which you and I, like, buying comics as kids or whatever, who gives a shit?
I get that. But at the time, like, I get why he's doing it though.
Oh no, I get that. So... I get it. But I'm just saying, like, they're attacking each other on this level where the regular people, they don't care.
I know.
You know?
But I think that's what kind of makes it a little funnier. It.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I understand.
No, there's stuff like that that happens all the time.
I get it.
I read the other day that, was it when Dave Cockrum resigned for problems that he was having at Marvel with X-Men, that they went ahead and essentially just changed up the name at the top, but they printed his letter as, like, one of the letters in the comics, resignation letter.
No.
Yeah. Like, there's things like that they do that, like...
It's just so silly. Yeah. I mean, it's just so many things. When you just draw some comics and have good stories instead of going after somebody naming them Funky Flashman. Yeah. It's just so weird.
So there was a lot of hatred, or not hatred, but just disdain between the two of them. How in later, like, tellings of the Marvel Universe, Stan would essentially go on and, you know, take credit for it. Anytime he felt like he never got the credit he deserved. And I think that was him taking shots back at maybe not necessarily the guy. Well, a guy at times who, yeah, for sure, Stan Lee gave into it a lot.
Sure, sure.
But there were also times where I think that maybe it wasn't necessarily as intended as it was seen. Anyway, the cells come back on all these series. It doesn't do well, and DC decides to cancel it.
Well, a lot of that stuff, I would think that again, like I say, they're just so far up their own butts that they're not even thinking about sales at this point. Yeah. You know, they're just thinking about getting back at each other.
Well, no, like that's it's the one issue there. That's the only thing that's in any of these. That's
I gotcha.
This is the one thing that I can find that I'll be like, yep, this is a Kirby diss, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So out of everything here, like that being compared, we saw some of the pettiness. Well, we're just talking about that. Remember, we saw some of the pettiness from Stan Lee.
Oh, sure.
Where he was like calling out.
Oh, I'm not saying this is one-sided at all.
Yeah, no. And I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying that's kind of comics in a way, though.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
is it's weird. At least at that time, it's a weird. It's so such a small thing.
Yeah.
And like where it is now, it's too like Disney owns Marvel. Like there's you're never going to see anything. But at the time, it's too such smaller.
Do you think they have this problem like in the greeting card industry?
Maybe
like one
originally.
Really good greeting card guy goes to another.
Maybe.
Like, then he writes these greeting cards is like happy birthday to everybody but Doug, yeah. You know, or something.
No. Anyway, so Kirby, the DC bigwigs, when they're like, these cells aren't matching, they give it kind of a year. Mm-hmm. These cells aren't what we thought they were.
These days, if you did that, I mean, you'd be sued out of existence.
Yeah.
You know?
And then they canceled the series. Mr. Miracle is the longest lasting to 18, all the others last 11. And then for the rest of the contract, he just kind of bounced around doing this and doing that for them until he filled it out. He That's leaves rough. After that. He goes back to Marvel just to get some work, but it's the same thing. He just kind of fills in here and there. And eventually in the late 70s, he goes on to work in animation and set design and other stuff
like
that.
He's like
and
one
he doesn't
the,
work in comics again.
He's like one of the godfathers of comics, and you relegated him to just like bat and clean up. You know? I mean,
well, they talk about like it's so different too. From where, when he left Marvel, or like that, I told the story about the phone call that they got. They talk about the time I think it was I don't remember who it was, but somebody there had found like this last time he had been there, the cigar stub that they had, and they made a plaque out of it, and they like you know made it all super fancy and stuff, and it just said that the king was here, and they like hung it there in the studios. By the time he comes back, like. 7-8 years later, they're calling him Jack the Hack and how he's a has-been and stuff that. So it's just like, it's
poor guy.
So well, I didn't mean to end that on a bummer, but
you did. No, anyway, like you said, I mean, he got into animation. So
do you remember Centurions?
I do remember Centurions.
He did that. I love that show.
I never really watched it, but I did watch a lot of Thundar. So
Thundar
was bad animation. A lot of that stuff from that time
was pretty
rough.
It wasn't. I just remember it wasn't Hanna-Barbera. It's Ruby Sparks or not Ruby. What is it? It's Ruby something.
I thought Thundar was Hanna, but maybe it's not. Maybe you're right.
Well, there was another company he worked for then. Thundar Barbarian is...
Thundar Barbarian.
It was on ABC. Do you want to know its original runtime? Ruby Spears Productions. It was Ruby Spears. That is who Jack Kirby worked for.
Oh, okay.
So what they did there at Ruby Spears, I want to see if I can find a collection of other TV shows here. See also list of Ruby Spears Productions. They did Hanna-Barbera Classic Collections, main list. Fang Face, don't know. The Plastic Man Comedy Adventure Show.
I do remember that. That was short-lived.
79 to 81.
Yeah.
Also, what would appear, that's where they would get their Fang Face in after that, because Fang Face and Fang Puss would be on there.
Fang Face and Fang Puss.
Mighty Man and Yuck.
Yep, I remember Mighty Man and Yuck, because Yuck had like a bag over his head or a bucket over his head or something.
And Rickety Rocket.
Don't remember Rickety Rocket.
Heathcliff and Dingbat. Then there was Thundar the Barbarian.
Thundar the Barbarian with his sidekick, Ookla the Mook.
And then Heathcliff teamed up with Marmaduke.
Yeah, that's the pairing everybody was just slobbering for right there.
Goldie Gold and Action Jack.
Oh, come on, man.
The Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo Puppy Hour. I remember watching the reruns of that on Cartoon Network. Mork and Mindy and the Laverne and Shirley / Fonz album.
You know, there is nothing that screams cartoons more to me than the Fonz and Shirley.
It was Mork and Mindy segments written at Hanna-Barbera and animated at Ruby Spears. Okay, Laverne and Shirley with Fonz segments produced by Hanna-Barbera. 27 episodes. I got to hunt that down when we're done. I feel like I've seen Mork and Mindy animation. It's bad. The Pac-Man Rubik's. The Pac-Man / Rubik's the Amazing Cube Hour.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I remember those.
They gave the cube its all hour.
This is what year was that?
83 to 84.
Yeah. So
Mr. T cartoon. We've talked about Ruby Spears before. They did the Chuck Norris TV show.
Yeah.
This is why. Yeah. Okay.
So it was a lot of like TV and movie properties that they turned into animation.
Yeah.
And they were all very bad. bad.
Oh, let me tell you their Sunday Supercade on CBS from 83 to 85 real quick.
Sunday?
Okay? I'm sorry, Saturday.
Okay.
Their Saturday Supercade consisted of Frogger.
Yep.
Donkey Kong.
Yep.
Pitfall.
Yep.
Qbert.
Yep.
Donkey Kong Jr.
Yeah.
Kangaroo and Space Ace.
Kangaroo.
Yeah. It had.
Now, Space Ace is Don Bluth, right?
13. Are you? We talking about the original?
Yeah, that's Don Bluth, right? The same dude that did.
So Space Ace was the game. Yes, it is Don Bluth.
Yeah. No, it was a cartoon based on that game.
Yeah, yeah. It was the game first, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't the game is considered terrible though, right? Or maybe it's just the port for Super Nintendo was terrible.
Yeah, the port for Super Nintendo. None of those were ever going to be any good because they were those Laserdisc-based games, you know, that had wonderful animation.
Yeah.
And then you port them to something like a Super Nintendo or whatever, and you cut the bit rate down by a tenth.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Pac-Man on Atari 2600.
Yeah. No, you're right. I always loved... I watched a lot of Don Bluth animation as a kid, like Fievel the American Tail.
Yeah, sure.
I'm trying to think. All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
We had the
Don Bluth Comedy Hour.
We had the Secret of the Nymph, but that one always scared the shit out of me.
Really?
Yeah.
Secret of Nim?
Yeah.
Nim. Mm. This is about the same time that
Dragon Slayer is the game.
Yeah. This is about the same time they were making Dark Crystal and all that kind
of stuff. Did you know that he is a Texas guy?
Don Bluth?
Yeah.
I think I remember that.
He was born in El Paso. Okay. He also went to BYU.
Yeah. Mormon. I'm just kidding.
He worked for Disney for a long time, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He did. Yeah, he's one of those guys that got kind of screwed over at Disney and went out and did his own thing.
See, there's a lot of people.
I know, there's a lot of that.
That's yeah. It seems that there's stories like that in every single industry.
Speaking of Disney, you know, we're only about a month away from the original design of Mickey Mouse going out to a public domain.
Yeah. Same with, well.
Steamboat Willie. It'll be up for grabs.
25 or 24?
24. Yeah.
So as long as it looks like Steamboat Willie.
Yeah, you can't do the current design.
Yeah, very much.
Same deal with Bugs Bunny, though. You can use, like, the original Bugs Bunny, the original Batman.
Well, yeah.
Is open.
That's true.
But it's the one with the floppy ears.
And you have to use with the blue gloves and the original.
He has wings, no cape.
Yeah. It's kind of like scaffold, but you have to use the Bob Kane, Bill Finger one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how you get.
I'll be interested to see.
Honey and Blood.
Well, they're doing a sequel, aren't they?
I haven't watched that.
I haven't watched the first one.
I don't care.
Yeah, same here.
It's just, you know. There's all these ideas, and I blame Sci-Fi Channel because Sci-Fi used to produce some really crappy sci-fi/horror movies. And now everybody, that and Troma, that's like a joke to make a really over-the-top stupid horror movie. Uh-huh. So like there's one about a killer sloth. I don't know if you've seen the preview for that. But that,
yes.
That just seems like you can get away from that pretty easily.
I think I kind of want to see it. I've seen the trailer. My wife sent me the trailer. I want to go see it.
Sure. Yeah.
You want to watch it with me too?
No, I don't want to watch it.
Come on. What if I came and I was like, hey.
I don't have that kind of time.
I feel like it has enough self. It's got to have self-awareness, right?
That's what I'm wondering if it actually does.
That's the thing. If I start watching it and it's playing it seriously, I'm stopping it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. You have to have self.
It would have to be stupid.
Yeah. Like if you're presenting this to me like, hey. We know this is just as ridiculous as you do.
Sure.
Let's go on this fun, stupid ride together. Then sure. I can get behind you all the way.
Yeah.
But don't try to feed me it like, hey, what about this actual serious serial killer sloth?
Yeah. There was another one, and I can't remember what it is now. There are so many of those, though, that are just, and I don't know how we got here. We started with Don Bluth, and now we're at Killer Sloths.
I think that's a good
copyright.
Place for us to end it then.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
go get you some Steamboat Willie.
Yeah.
Go out there and get it.
You got a couple months, or well, you got a month to get your version of it to get. Well, I mean, it's got to be like close to the
Death original. Boat Willie.
Death. Oh, show us your best Death Boat Willie.
I don't like that. No. Not great.
All right. Well, I don't know where to go from that.
Nah,
so.
We're all good. So next time you're saying we're actually getting into the Mr. Miracle stuff.
Kind of.
Okay. All right. We're getting close.
You know, we're about to. Yeah. Yeah. We're about to dive in.
All this comic book edging you're doing to me here. I don't know.
What? We're the next couple weeks, we're going to get into actual comic books. So okay. It's not going to be no right, more cool. story. This
no,
is the
I
last
like
little,
this.
I know, but I this like is the last, background. This is the last little bit of story kind of in a way. Yeah. I'll add some more tidbits here and there. And at one point in time, we'll have to, cause there's audio of, it had to be the late '80s, maybe early '90s. Jack Kirby is at a New York radio station for one of his birthdays in there, mm-hmm. and he's taking like phone interviews and stuff, and mm-hmm. they get Stan to call in.
Oh,
and there is like kind of heated back and forth, not heated, but like, you know, there's some back and forth of like, yeah. Stan's like, I never thought that you appreciated what I did. And Jack's like, I think that you took credit from what, like, they're just kind of going back. But yeah. I think that we just kind of need to cover that a bit.
I'd love to hear that.
Just because it paints the final picture before, Jack passes away in 94, mm-hmm. Which from my understanding, thankfully, or at least it seems like they were on at least applicable terms then. Mm-hmm. According to Stan Lee, the last thing that Kirby ever said to him was they were at some convention and he just walked up to him and he told him, you have nothing to reproach yourself about.
Mm.
And then just kind of like, you know, shook his hand and just kind of let him be. Wow. But it's still a very interesting relationship to see. And then it's actually a very nice kind of secondary story in the back. Like, there's things that you can pick up in on Tom King's Mr. Miracle by knowing this story of just,
yeah,
because Funky Flashman is in throughout the whole series. Wow. And he's portrayed kind of like that same kind of, not, he's not the same huckster, but you can kind of see that he's meant to represent Stan at mm-hmm. times. And it's mm-hmm. just very interesting to see.
Hmm.
But yeah, so we got a lot of great stuff. Maybe
that's
why
that's one
time.
Of your favorites? Because of the background stuff,
yes.
that goes with it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot. So it's,
I can see that.
It's a lot of things. It is
his cod piece.
No, that was the Doom Patrol villain.
Oh, okay.
It is, yeah, the whole backstory in it. Like, I'm a massive Jack Kirby fan, and there's something about, well, you've worked with me for a long time, or in, you know, mm-hmm. some aspects,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
this. I love like underdogs and stuff mm-hmm. like that, or mm-hmm. just people that mm-hmm. I don't feel got their due credit at times. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that with Tom Wilson, and something I feel with Jack Kirby in the same way. Mm-hmm. So it's that connection there, of course. And then at least with the 12 issue series that Tom King did, and I've told people this a lot, and it was weird to me. Like, I get how people can relate to things in a certain way and it mean a lot to them.
Yeah.
Books you read, movies you watch, mm-hmm. like, it, for some reason, it just connects to you on so many different levels. Mm-hmm. I never thought that I could get that from a comic book.
Really?
Until I read this. And thankfully I read it as a whole and not like individual issues, because it carries over. Yeah. But it just, like, I'll admit, I still tear up reading it now.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And I've read it like 4 or 5 times. Huh. So there's just things that...
Yeah, I'd love to read that.
Yeah, there's just things that, at least for me, resonate. See, I'm trying not to now.
Yeah, I get it.
It's cool.
Send me a link. Send me a link, because I would love to read those.
Okay. Yeah. Or I can just bring my copy with me.
Either way. However you want to do it.
But yeah, I'll hunt it down.
I don't want to manhandle your pages.
Maybe I want you to. Anyway, it's just a really great thing, just kind of connect, because if you just read it on the surface, it can be a regular superhero story of things that are going on. And mm-hmm. then there's just a lot of development. It feels like it's for a certain group of people, and I'm in that group.
Yeah. That's cool. So, yeah, I'd love to read that. That sounds awesome.
Anyway. So
nothing
that
I like
that.
More than depressing comics. That's great. Sounds good.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know. It's
no,
the
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. There's certain things that resonate with us, and certain things that don't.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
My anything that resonates with me is usually a guy who's an asshole that's funny. So those are the things that resonate with me.
I gotcha. As always,
hey,
speaking
of that, I'm so sorry. I just have to ask one thing. Have you watching The Curse at all? Do you know what I'm talking about? Nathan Fielder. New show, him and Emma Stone. They are basically Chip and Joanna, but gone really bad. It's made by A24 also,
yeah.
Which is
what's
so
it
weird.
On?
It's on HBO. But
hold on. Wait. Nathan Fielder from
yes.
The Rehearsal.
Nathan Fielder from
with
Nathan for You.
Emma Stone?
Yes.
So how is
it is it is it, it Currently, it is the most uncomfortable thing I'm watching.
No, don't tell me that. Super uncomfortable. Then I can't watch it.
Oh, it'll get
you. Does it use real people?
No. It's not that kind of thing.
It's scripted?
No. It's scripted. Yes, it's all scripted. Yes, it's not at anyone's expense.
Okay. That makes me feel a little better.
Even honestly, you can Nathan For You was not at anybody's expense either.
Yeah.
You know, it was just funny.
Yeah.
But the rehearsal, a little different.
That was so weird.
It was weird. Yeah. This one.
I watched that thing just out of just curiosity. And part of me was just like,
when you get to the end, it's a whole different show. When you get to the end, you realize, oh, shit. Yeah, this whole thing's
freaking weird.
Yeah,
and it took so many turns throughout the whole thing too. Because I'd be like, I remember telling somebody like, "Oh, what are you watching?" I explain after episode
Nobody
one.
Nobody gets it until they watch it.
And I'd be like, "Oh," and I explain episode one. They're like, "Oh, that's cool." And they'd be like, "Hey, did you watch more of that?" And I go, "Yeah, episode two and three. This happened." And they're like, "Wait, I thought this show was about."
It's a whole.
And I was like. It still kind of technically is.
You have no idea what that show is about until the end.
No, you don't.
Yeah. And then this one, he co-wrote and is co-producing. And so I think they went to Nathan Fielder and said, okay, what you got that's weirder than that? And then he wrote this. So I don't know what's going to happen. I just know the one I watched last night. I'm like, I'm glad it's over kind of thing. But I like watching it. You know?
Then I can't. See, here's the thing.
It's very uncomfortable.
Then I can't do it. I could at one point in time, but you watch The Office, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the Scott's Tots episode?
Oh, I love that episode.
I hate that episode. So
lithium ion batteries. Come on. They charge super quick.
It gets me every time. I cringe.
Gave them all a battery.
I cringe. And I know what's going to happen still. And I still feel that same cringe.
They start dancing for him and singing for him and all that. And he's just sitting there the whole time. Just like, I can't do this. Scott's Tots. Yeah, it's like that. But times 10.
You've sold me on it.
It's pretty rough. Yeah.
No, I can't.
It is. I can't figure out whether their marriage is going to make it.
Is there anything gross though?
No,
it's not.
No,
it's just
gross.
Awkward.
It's just awkward.
Like
it's
I'm trying to figure out in the weirdness of like what kind of weird uncomfortableness it is. So it's all just situational.
It is all situational weirdness. Okay. In that they're trying to be the next big couple that does the house renovation flipping kind of stuff, but they're trying to do it for the city and create jobs and all this stuff. And so it really reminds me, it really resonates with me because of where we live. But like the one last night, there's this goofy thing that happens and it's just natural between a couple, you know, because you don't really know whether this couple likes each other or not, yet they're married.
Uh-huh.
And there's this off the cuff thing that happens. And then she immediately sets up her phone and says, let's do that again so I can record it for Instagram. And then they do it over and over and over. And you're just like, oh, God, this is rough. Yeah, it starts as this sweet thing that just declines so rapidly into get the fuck out, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's just it's good, though. It's good stuff. I'd look forward to it.
All right.
There's only three episodes in, too, is what I'm telling you. Super weird.
All right. I'll have to
but there you go. The curse.
All right. I'll check that out.
Jack Kirby, go check it out.
R.I.P. as always, thank you guys for taking the time to listen. We appreciate it. Make sure you hop on over to RogueMediaNetwork.com to check out all the other great podcasts in the Rogue Media Network family.
RogueMediaNetwork.com.
Until next time, stay safe, everybody.
GollyCon.
Frozen heroes, gonna tell you about frozen heroes, gonna tell you about.
This has been a Rogue Media Network